This is Father David Celery with this week's focus, Discovering Jesus. Dear friends, if current data is to be believed, we're all on our way to having the attention span of hummingbirds. That may be the one reason why this is the fifth consecutive Sunday in a row that we're working our way through the sixth chapter of John. True, this is by far John's longest chapter, but does it really almost deserve 10% of the liturgical year just to identify Jesus as the bread of life? Well, apparently it does. In this week's gospel, we see many followers of Jesus who've been with him through the miracles and revelations turn away because the bread of life message, well, it's just too hard for them to accept. They've eaten the loaves and fishes. They've been struck by his command of the law. They've been overwhelmed by his miracles. But they have their own ideas of what the Messiah should be. Frankly, they were expecting really big things, not just the big things that Jesus was telling them. John devotes the first 12 chapters of his gospel to a revelation of Jesus. Who is he? Why is he here? What does that mean for us? On six occasions, Jesus uses a show-and-tell technique that any kindergarten teacher would recognize. You see, he captures people's attention with miracles. Then he creates a metaphor linking the miracle with his mission. There's nothing fancy about this transition to the bread of life message. Having miraculously fed the multitude, he then tells them directly, "I'm the bread of life." On five other occasions, he uses the same I am formula, linked to a miraculous event to reveal his divine makeup and his mission. Like every effective teacher, Jesus demonstrates his lessons with action. His delivery, well, it's persistent, and repetition blended with inspired variation. His message is consistent. Across the ages, it satisfies humble believers and brilliant scholars. It's cruelly ironic that in the midst of his betrayal, Judas addresses Jesus as teacher. As John writes in the first chapter of his gospel, the light of Christ shined in the darkness and could not be overcome. But Satan gave it his best shot, and Judas, well, was his best student. He appealed to Judas's pride, to his greed, to his jealousy. Judas listened to Satan and learned his lessons well. So here's an original disciple, beloved of Jesus, who attended all the classes, heard the parables, saw the miracles, witnessed the constant outpouring of love. Yet he rejected the Word made flesh in favor of a quick buck. Clearly, even with a divine teacher, education, it's a two-way street. Jesus does the teaching, but you and I, we must do the learning. We're all the children of God, not the robots of God. Jesus doesn't program us. He reveals the will of God. He embodies the love of God. And we have free will to reject or embrace his teachings. Ask any teacher, what's the most effective teaching technique? They'll tell you it's discovery, leading students to find and embrace the truth. In other words, making it their own. That's why the origin of the word educate is educare. In Latin, it means to draw out, in this case, to connect us with our innate yearning to be united with God. At the start of John 6, Jesus literally sets the table for our learning. His miracle of multiplying loaves and fishes, it demonstrates his power. This is obviously someone sent from God, more than a messenger, a Messiah. We'd better listen to him. And having dramatically gotten our attention, Jesus then challenges us to think outside the box. Using the metaphor of nourishment, he invites us to the Father's feast, an eternal spiritual banquet where Christ is consumed for love of us. At the conclusion of this gospel, we see the results of his instruction in a critical divide between the slow learners and, well, I guess we might say the no learners. While others turned away, it's plodding Peter who speaks the words of faith. We've come to believe that you're the Holy One of God. Peter's intellect, well, he still struggles with it, but his heart His heart has the will to believe as he voices the inevitability of Jesus. To whom shall we go? That inevitability is the best we can ever be expected by the poor fishermen, by learned theologians, or by any of us too. You see, Jesus is the last hope, the best hope, the only hope for God's backward children. In other words, to whom shall we go? And so, even in doubt and fear, you and I, we cling to Christ. Peter, the struggling, faithful student of this gospel, would later cravenly deny Christ. And at one time, or in one form or another, so have we all. That's why the very human, very persistent shadow of doubt must be constantly confronted and suspended until it can be vanquished. Our faith, yours and mine, it's a gift too often misplaced that must be repeatedly retrieved and ultimately repaired. We all suffer from a spiritual attention deficit disorder. It's part of the human condition. We're so easily distracted, taken up with the latest shiny object in the here and now. Our values, our judgment, our priorities, they're constantly under assault. That's why our faith must be nourished every day by the bread of life. In daily prayer and scripture, the teacher and his lessons must live in our here and now, not just in the there and then. If that means taking 5 Sundays to discover Jesus and accept that he is the very bread of life, it's time well spent. It's a lesson well learned and well lived. This has been Father David Celery with this week's Focus. To learn more, visit me at davidcelery.org or follow me on Facebook, iTunes, or Twitter. God love you.